June 1, 2020. It's the Juan from Pedro Show. Walk for Pedro show. Everybody, happy Monday, 1st of June. We turn a page on another month. And still in quarantine. In fact, now we're in the county here, Los Angeles, 6 to 6 curfew. And so Brother Matt's at the Love Grotto on Pleasure Point a couple miles south. But I'm not totally man alone because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got with me Evan Lipson in Chattanooga. Hey,
the night is young. Love is in the air. Well, hey now.
Yeah, welcome aboard, truly. Of course, we got to thank right away Mike Begetta for the connect. Because I've been playing all, how many? Now, you're Chattanooga, dude.
Son of Baghdad, as we call him in the Bread Lane disheveled monkey biters.
Yeah. Now, most of the people he's connected with is the town he's living in these days. Knoxville.
Right.
But you're not. You're in Chattanooga. But you joined him to help, yeah, Reverend Fred Lane. I had him on the show via Mike Begetta, too. And, well, let's. I should tell people we start off with the Blues to You from John Coltrane. And then Satanized with Raise the Flaccid Horn.
That's yeah. Right. Still trying to raise that one up.
Yeah, we have an expression here in Pedro for something that ain't really happening. We say nano-flaccid.
Nano-flaccid. Okay.
Not just flaccid, but nano-flaccid.
Like a lilac dangling in the morning dew.
Like throwing a hot dog down the hallway, right?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Stick your dick in a glass of milk. Okay, your earliest...
Make me hungry here.
Yeah, your earliest musical recollection.
Oh, outside of the womb, my aunt and uncle had a piano. I'd mess around on that a lot.
Okay, and where was this?
They were up in Massachusetts.
Mike Begetta, right? He's Massachusetts.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, they were in Sudbury, just outside of Boston.
I think he was from West Mass.
Okay, dig, yeah.
Because I met his pop. We played the Iron Horse. Northampton, and his pop game, who was a guitar man, right?
Pretty country out there. There's a lot of psychedelic-minded people as well.
Jay Maskus.
Uh-huh, yeah, who is kind of he's a bit of like a dead ringer for Mike Begetta, no?
We got him on stage to do Stooges Funhouse with us that night I was telling you about Iron Horse. And he brought his son, and he helped his son, Rory, draw dicks on the bulkheads in the dressing room downstairs.
Uh-huh.
Because that's what a father and son team is about, right?
Right.
And how to draw dicks. I mean, you can't have a dressing room without dicks all over the bulkheads, right?
No. I think it's like an ancient rite of passage. This goes back to the Byzantine Empire.
It goes along with monitors and a PA system and whiskey glasses. Okay, so you're in the pad there, and there's a piano. Did you end up?
I think we later inherited the same upright piano, but I banged around on that a bunch.
Did they have you do lessons?
Not until I was 10, 9 or 10, I think.
Now, how was the experience? We've had all kinds of guests and all kinds of experiences, and it seems like the teacher's the main determiner.
Yeah, the teacher was a drag, heavy dandruff BO situation. Mr. Crumb, I think was his name. He was quite a crumb. It was a fitting name.
Like an artist.
I dig his stuff. He was from Philly as well. But he bummed me out about music for about a year. And it's different. I was kind of forced to play the piano. It wasn't by choice. Okay. And then it took about a year for the brain to rearrange and the puberty region to blossom into its larval stage. So then
Can I ask you this? What was the first record you bought for yourself?
The first for myself? I had an older brother, so I listened to a lot. I wasn't buying too much. I was listening to stuff
At some point, you must have bought a record.
Yeah, he turned me on to all this.
I understand that. That's what fucking brothers and sisters are for, you know. But I'm wondering, you personally, when laid out the fucking coinage.
That led me into. I think the first thing that just like he had all these Pink Floyd albums, but there was one that I just bought the one that he didn't have, which was, what was it? It's like the second full length they did. What was that?
Full of Secrets.
Saucer Full of Secrets.
And I think Syd Barrett's only got one song on it.
Yeah, it's like the last tune. It's pretty haunting.
Jug Band Blues?
Yeah, I think that's...
You know, I read the book what's his name? Chapman. He sang for the Glaxo Babies. Chris Chapman, I think. And he's talking about that. They brought in like a Salvation Army band and shit.
Right.
Yeah, it's sad book in a way, but
yeah, and it's like he's the lyrics.
So you read this book, okay? Because
I haven't read the book.
Oh, because the idea is Syd was this crazy guy and shit, and he makes a good case that he wasn't. Rob Chapman, that was his name, Rob Chapman.
Uh-huh.
Wrote it. Check it out if you can. So you bought. What about the first gig you went to?
That was different. The first gig, my dad took me to, I don't remember where it was. It was a jazz club in D.C., and I think it was something, I think it was Stanley Turrentine. I'm not sure about that, but that was the first time I saw
live music.
Anybody playing and particularly somebody playing the double bass. I was already playing, I think, electric bass. I had started a few months earlier. This is like when I was 12 or 13.
Yeah.
And then immediately... Seeing that, I had to get my hands on one.
Let me ask you about school. Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
No, there wasn't a march. I mean, this is 7th grade. It was there wasn't a marching band. There was like a concert band and I think a sort of like a big band of sorts. But I fucked with the big band.
And what'd you play?
I was playing the upright. Nobody else was playing bass.
Now, that's why. What led you to it? Because no one else was doing it?
No, I was led to it myself. I didn't even know the instrument existed. I mean, I just thought it was a large
giant violin, right?
yeah. My brother said, "Oh, you should play the bass because everybody plays guitar." And it was kind of a practical. He said, "Oh, you don't."
There's a lot of great bass players came from that, Evan, like Carol Kay and Joe Osborne. They're guitar guys, people, and there was lots of work because no one wanted to rock the fucking bass.
Right. Yeah, it was pretty pragmatic of him to realize that.
Tony Mamone told me that was a pretty good idea. I'm sorry.
I didn't have any realization of that, so I was thankful later that I just took to the instrument. I remember just hearing from afar. You know, the larger sound waves would carry, the bass would be the thing that you would hear most from a distance, but at close range, you know, it's the thing that people usually don't hear at all. So I thought that was an interesting thing, how it could be absorbed more from far away, but it wasn't what you saw at a surface or close range view. But I like the tactile feel of it, the sonority, everything attracted me.
Did you try bass guitar before stand-up?
Yeah, about 3 months before. And I continued playing both. I still do.
Yeah, so you did play it for a couple. Now, before that, the only music you did was the piano? Left hand?
Right.
Left hand. Right?
I put them both in there.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the bass clef, you know.
Right? Sure, yeah. So I could already read that.
Sure. Right. And I asked about the marching band because, like, Bones... And the baritone horns, the tubas, and that shit, that's bass clef, too. Big mouthpieces, too. I heard it's easier to march with.
But then I escaped with my mother to Philly, and the high school, it was like a charter school. So it was, you know, people had like a major. You could be, you know, drama, instrumental music, vocal music, you know, visual art. So that was, there were no sports teams. It was just all...
No, I ask about that shit, Evan, because... Some schools have just eliminated their arts programs. Like, this is why Flea started his conservatory of music in Silver Lake, because he went back to Fairfax where he played trumpet, learned, and there was no program. Okay, so that's why I asked that, because some people think it's kind of frivolous, the arts, you know.
Oh, yeah,
times like these. Look, I'm going to play something here. Hope is a lack of information.
That's right.
Okay.
It's probably true.
Thank you. I'm behind you. You have an automatic transmission. And you're human. Sue. Carl, just jump.
Never has nothing to do with now.
Maine.
Earthquake.
Rattlesnakes.
Don't order anything you want to get high on in a frosted glass because of the tension. Sunflower seeds in a yellow toilet bowl in Lancaster. For eye consciousness art, I saw the saw shop.
Saw shop.
People that have slow reactions should learn how to stand there, stomp their heel, and yodel. Sierra Moe. Burke for the cops. I have a list from here to the tree. And I have a lisp because I sit on a knee. I have a neon X on me. I have a neon hex for thee. The window art of Lancaster is neglect in the nth degree. The window art in Lancaster sits on your knee. The window art in Lancaster is Air Force brat. The art in the window of Lancaster is beyond this and that. The window art in Lancaster, and that's that. Pinamento of the put-up signpost. Put a pinamento of the neon on neon lunch box. Pinamento of the moment with horses fetlocks. Pinamento of the angel hair ghost of the carnival skull. Pinamento of a lobster with a popcorn hull. When Lancaster plumps, there'll be a hay hurricane. With nut cups and faded candy canes and cotton candy Palomino fair horse manes. I'm telling you, man. Hell, alfalfa, I can't understand. Bulge and uranium smile and the Palmdale bulge and the belt of alfalfa. And the sand buckle. And the ravens chuckle.
and the still pink girdles without a rustle.
And the granite knuckle of Huckle Buckle.
Man's worst friend gave me a picture. Man's best friend gave me a flea. Well, anyway, besides the point, he's been flat on his back for 2 rays.
My hot hands gripping. Gripping for you. Reaching out, flipping. To occasional. Giggy.
the nitty-gritty of life. I'll stand for you to be my wife. Goodbye, baby. Don't forget to write. Got it from myself soon. If it takes all night.
Thank you.
Satan has with hope is a lack of information. We were discussing off air.
All right.
From a playwright. They borrowed this for a title, and I said, it's okay, because you can't copyright titles. Dear Hoof, brand new. I call on the Cap Beefheart after that with some poetry. I saw the I Saw Shop. Strike Ship, brand new. Strike Slip, sorry. Brand new prize with John Talley Jones of the Urinals. Toby's coming over tonight. A bilge pump from Leeds in England with Me No Light. Kay Salita, which is Kay from Black Flag. Funny How Things Change. Super Session, Raymond Pettibone's band, ensemble. It's got a... He writes all the lyrics, but sometimes Ricky spoke the things. In this case, Ricky doing Goodbye Baby. And then finally, excerpt from Knesset Gallery San Francisco by Jack Wright and Evan Lipson. So what about the stuff, Evan, after school in the bedroom or the garage or the basement, you know, getting the bands with your buddies at school and stuff?
Yeah, that started initially. There wasn't a great pool of players when I first started to collaborate with. But then when I moved to Philly and in high school, there was those guys really charged things up. So I was starting to do that. That was more initially going into a jazz direction. That was kind of what people were cutting their teeth on.
Well, let me ask you this. Were you guys already songwriting, or were you trying to copy stuff off records like me and D. Boone?
Both. That was just starting to happen. I guess I started writing maybe around 15 or something.
Junior high. No, high school, but the beginning of high school. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask you this. What was your first bass guitar?
What was it? A piece of shit. Montoya or something? It was like a short scale bass, kind of precision P bass style.
Kind of high action?
I don't remember.
My first bass was a K, and this motherfucker was like, you know, William Tell with the bow and arrow kind of shit. You could stick your whole fucking arm in between the strings and the fretboard.
Oh, you mean the contrabass? Yeah. No,
no. I'm talking about, I did for a little while have a stand-up K, but this electric bass was a K. It was just terrible action. Well, I didn't know anything about these motherfuckers. I didn't know about the neck, you know, the angle. You got to get there with the truss rod adjust and shit like that. You know.
So there's this great line. I hadn't read it, or I don't know where you said it, but I really I've repeated it. With a few friends of mine, we really adore this line that apparently was attributed to you, where you said, just not, you know, knowing anything about it other than it had these four strings, and you said, your thought with tuning was, you just thought some people like them loose and some people like them tight.
Yeah, well, you know, we would tune, but we would, there's a Creedence Clearwater Revival song called Down on the Corner, and we thought if you, you know, play Down on the Corner, and it sounded right, you were in tune. We didn't know that your Down on the Corner had to be the other guy's. Yeah, some guys like them loose, some like them. We didn't relate it to pitch. Anyway, back to your story. What was your first amp?
That was a school instrument. I didn't have one of my own for a while.
Well, how'd you practice with this band?
They didn't care. The school, nobody else played it, so they let me take it home.
Oh, wow.
Or I didn't know if they let me, I just did it. And then... then I found a King plywood sitting in the back of this music store, for like, what was that? It was like, $800. So that was a good deal on that. That was a good plywood. That did have some, that built up some strength because it did have some high action, which was good. But,
you're talking about bass or amplifier?
This was a bass.
Okay, because I asked you about the amplifier.
Oh, you did? My bad.
No, don't worry. Did this band, this first one you got together with your buddies, did they ever do a gig?
Yeah, we did. I mean...
What was that gig like? Evan, what was that first gig for you like?
We played, I didn't play in regular rock bands. I mean, it's strange because I was into that as a model, but it just wasn't, the school, like I was saying, I went to, jazz was strangely the thing people were into. I mean, it was jazz pro, like I said, it was a charter school, so it's like people came for that. It was mostly a black school, so, black jazz musicians, and we'd play gigs. That's kind of how I saw the Duchamp thing, by accident, because we played a gig at the Art Museum. I think that was maybe the first one I played.
And what was it like? Was it scary?
Nobody was there. I mean, they were just having drinks.
You know what we call those? Character builders.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it built the bridge to nowhere. But
I got my own airbrush. with the spiel. Okay.
Yeah.
So let me ask you then, Evan.
Mm-hmm.
To me, music is music, so I don't really care about the genre. Just the idea of performing music in front of people, I want to know about that. It was at an art gallery, and it was a mix of materials. Some of it was original, some was cover.
No, that was initially just playing standards.
Okay.
But the thing in that kind of gig, I mean, it's like I wouldn't call it directly a competitive atmosphere, but it was a feeling where we were pushing each other. And, I think that's sort of a tradition in jazz, is almost, the kind of cutting session nature.
Which is kind of terrible. You know, the song they usually use for that is Giant Steps.
Right. And
John Coltrane, John Coltrane, to me, just look at the pictures, you know. By the way, he has his first house he bought with his GI Bill money. So on 33rd Street there in Philadelphia, I always take my band guys there.
Yeah.
And I got a guy doing a renovation, there was a work crew there, and I didn't even ask for it, but he gave me a little piece of brick, and it's on the dash of my boat. But they use this compassionate, open man's music to, like, put people down, killing floor.
Mm-hmm.
It's so opposite of that shit. I
kind of wish there was a return to that. I mean, it did excel. There's obviously a dark aspect to that. And it's kind of exclusionary. I mean, it's sort of the opposite of punk, right? Which is saying that everyone can do this at any level. You don't need any technical skill. But jazz, and I guess classical music, and it's a different culture, but also has a certain, like, the entry point requires a certain level of skill that's, like, undeniable. I think also in metal as well, right?
Well, I read the Quincy Troupe book with Miles, and he's talking about Ornette making noise on that sax and shit. And then Captain Beefheart, right? He gets to be good friends with Ornette Coleman, and he just blasted into it with, like, no training. And I mean, why I don't get into that genre stuff. I just think music.
Right. Well, I think
there's different ways. There's different
about that.
You're talking about different traditions and different cultures of it. Yeah. Okay.
Well, what I will say about that is I prefer that scenario much more to the competition. I mean, there's always a level of competition for gigs and so forth, but the competition today, which is just a competition for attention and advertising, everyone marketing themselves. I'd much prefer a situation in which people are competing at the level of music or their instruments, because I think that tends to develop things much more than fucking around on Facebook. Excuse my French, but yeah. I'm not saying it's a perfect model, but...
No, look, we're at the end of the first... We'll continue this. We're at the end of the first hour. What? Diderot Show, June 1, 2020. Special guest, Evan Lips. Hold tight for hour two. June 1, 2020. It's the second hour of the Walk from Pedro Show.
Was bist du so traurig? Gleich wie uns ganz.
und all unsere Lügen und Kampf. Wie kann das sein?
The documentary about Fitzcarraldo. I find the documentaries to be way more interesting than the movies.
Well, that movie there, the amount of... They actually moved the boat. I think they just left the boat. I think there was three boats.
Uh-huh.
And it was like 10 times bigger than the original. They made it even more hell. Some native people were killed. One guy saw his leg off because he bit by a snake. He had to saw his leg off with a chainsaw. Okay, people, we start the second hour off with So Low, So Kind, Mineshaft, Few with Antenna, The Extract, Birkenstock, Timothy Eary, Flower Waltz. There's a New World just opening for me by Imad Wasif, Black Moon Tape, Try To, and finally In Out, Mineshaft. So what happens after high school? You go to college?
I did. Well, not immediately.
Well, where's your music journey taking you at this point?
I was, I probably did a lot of drugs and then I did have some there was a guy in the high school, I should say, that had nothing to do with this. He wasn't in the music world. I mean, he made music, but, he wasn't, officially. And so he was doing a lot of electronic music. And he became like a very dear friend, kind of the closest friend I had, continued to have a relationship from those days. And so this guy was turning me on to, a lot of electronic music. That was his bag. And, this opened me up in a completely different direction. I think the two of us were also like-minded in that we were interested in what was a more unconventional or what was a disruption of normality. Although, you know, coming from maybe I had a little more of a formalized background or semi-formal, and he was completely self-taught.
Did you do recording?
We did. We fucked around a little, but nothing that was officially released. I mean, he continued to produce music. He's out there. His name's Joe Lentini. But we did collaborate later. We've done a few things. I'd like to do more with him. But that kind of led into. So you played a pair of these Mineshaft tracks,
right?
Which has kind of been my main thing in Tennessee, or it's the thing that I kind of ritually collaborate in terms of a collaboration, something that I've been doing for a number of years with a fellow named Evan Michael Hubbard.
I want to play here. I Love Pain, another Mineshaft tune. And, you know, I thought of when I saw that title, there was a Quincy, a TV show with Jack Klugman as a coroner. And, of course, at the time, because 1977 or something, so there's, like, CPO Sharky had to have a punk episode. And so there's a punk, and there's a band, I think they're called Pain or some shit, and they're singing some song. I love pain. I dig pain or something.
Oh, yeah. No, I just saw this. I think Sean Partridge put this up.
Okay, let's play.
It's amazing.
Time is now, the moment is here. doubt. In the field, it will be found. Face the fear, ringing in your ear. The time is now, the moment is here. Turn around, come in this way.
Thank you. Thank you. I was never married, but when I was down in Rhode Island, I had Alice Baker as my partner. I wasn't grown up at the time, but I was the same size as a grown person, the same size as her. When I first saw her, she was bigger than me because I wasn't grown up at that time. Then I grew to be the same size as her.
Peter Show Mineshaft with I Love Pain, reminiscing about some 70s bullshit television episodes. wearing some punk costume for an episode. Senor Al from South London after that with Dead Man Walker. Tripod Jimmy, Tom Herman from Parubu. That Bald Electrician, Peter Laffner after that with Prove It, a television cover at practice, and then finally David Greenberger in Prime Lens with Alice Baker. Who's David Greenberger?
Greenberger is primarily known for something called the Duplex Planet. That was his big stain on the world. Starting in the late 70s, it was a magazine or a zine. I don't know what he refers to it as. Where he was working in a nursing home, and he would interview the various residents of this assisted living center, but it wasn't the usual kind of condescending project of looking at these people as a historical time capsule and trying to capture their, you know, ancient wisdom. He was just having regular conversations or asking them strange questions, you know, what do you like better, coffee or meat? And they'd have sometimes some really amusing replies, sometimes kind of tragic. So from the zine, he started transferring that into collaborations with musicians, where the musicians would write the music. And I should say also Greenberger used to play in a band called Men in Volts, so he came from music himself, so he has that sensibility. But so there's some level of collaboration, but usually the way it works is the musicians, at least in my case, compose different pieces, almost like different moods or rooms and feels and tempos, and then he selects a text from these conversations. And he's reading. He's not doing voices or characters. It's a straight oration, but it's basically him talking over this music. It's interesting. I refer to him as the Ken Nordine of assisted living.
Are you familiar with Joe Frank?
That rings a bell. Remind me of who that is.
He passed away a couple of years ago, but he would do these big spiels over music, uh-huh. Like kind of mind movies. Yeah, these long.
It's a little bit like that, like a radio drama. Well, that's
kind of like this, but the way he got his source, he would call up friends and shit and ask them stuff and let them talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but give them a keyword or something, and then from there they just go off on it. You know, sort of like I guess the way. Who's that guy? Woody Allen, right? There's no script. You just set people up and they start spieling.
Right. Yeah, there's a... I mean, it's interesting because it's not like a film score or something you would do. The music is kind of the last thing that's done. I was thinking he would offer the text first and then the music would be derived from that, but he's kind of got this ability to select the right thing. And he also started... just making up characters eventually as he's getting, now he's, you know, he's becoming an old man. So it's like, turning into one of his subjects. I was interested in it, at the level where I heard a recording. So a big thing that attracted me to moving to Chattanooga was, a group called the Shaking Ray Levi's, which they also had something called the Shaking Ray Levi Society, and they were presenting all kinds of far out stuff there since '86. So they were the only thing I knew about that town, other than that it was a fun word to type, and I became very close with them shortly upon arrival, and they had worked with Greenberger since late '90s or early aughts, and were recently doing a project when I was down there that kind of got more into the territory. A lot of the material he had done before, the musicians usually kind of set up a vamp, and then he just talks, and it was still interesting, but I really was more into where it was going with them, where the music was more like a interactive radio drama. It was like another, you know, character in dialogue with the spoken word. So that's kind of where I tried to push my contribution.
Yeah. You know, you have this other project, Normal Love. How'd that come about?
So that's when I moved back to Philly. I went to school in Baltimore for a couple of years.
Okay.
And there was a crew of people, Alex Nagel, guitar player, another guitar player named Amnon Friedland, drummer named Eli Litwin, and a violin player actually that I went to high school with that was I was also very close with named Carlos Santiago Jr. And it was an interesting assemblage of, like, pretty different backgrounds amongst all five people, but all the sort of unifying ambition was ambitiousness itself. I mean, just sort of a desire to push to the edge of our abilities in something that was, there's not much improvisation. It was pretty through-composed music. But, I mean, some of it, yeah, pretty, very technical, but that wasn't the emphasis. It was really just, okay, we have a free practice space. We all have some time and, you know, this, we've all put a lot into this shit. Let's see how far we can take it as a band collaborate. But it wasn't really a collaboration initially. It was like everyone wrote this music through composed, and then it was rehearsed and performed. I mean, it took like a year before we played any gigs.
And obviously you recorded because they got a couple tracks here.
Yeah, yeah. There was like two full lengths and a 7-inch. But yeah, the second record was a bit more of a unified aesthetic, shall we say. The first thing was like each individual bringing in pretty wildly different music.
And did you guys tour?
Yeah, we toured a bit.
Now, was this your first touring?
No. St. Ives and Normal have emerged around the same time, and there's some shared personnel between those two units. But there was a band I had in Baltimore that was the first thing I toured with.
What were they called?
It was called Power Lunch.
And what was it like? Well, how did you find Torrent?
It was the best of life and the worst of life all rolled into one.
The petri dish.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I think I still have some of the disease in me.
And antibodies.
But it was enough. Yeah, it was enough to. I continued to do this. So I realized this could be an interesting way to go.
Sure, sure.
And really to just there isn't another. It's not like there's past eras where there were gigs just far more abundant and you could play all the time. And really now the only way to play night after night and to sort of bring the music to a level that's worth a damn is to go on the road. And also there's the aspect of hearing what people are doing in other places and sort of measuring your own abilities or your own music against what others are doing.
Some yardstick?
Yeah, a little bit of that. So
I'm curious about this Baltimore band because you didn't give me any tracks from them. Did they record?
Yeah, there was some. I don't even know if I have any of those anymore. I mean, it was self-released. I think we just made Burns like some CDRs, if you remember those.
That's okay. I was just curious because it's all part of your journey, you know?
Yeah. It's not like music that I discount or anything. Clearly, you know, early works. It's stuff that, some of the ideas that were maybe like, more crystallized and articulated in a better in some of these later bands that you mentioned, but it's, you know, still there. I think if you wanted to find it, it's probably up somewhere.
Okay. We come to the second hour, June 1, 2020 edition Watt Peters Show. Special guest Evan Lipson. Hold tight for hour 3. June 1, 2020. It's the third hour of the Lot from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
through the
show. We start off the third hour with Normal Love. The signal's coming from Pittsburgh, part one. Other side of Pennsylvania. Then the Moonskis, Peace March to Barstow. And then part two of The Signal is coming from Pittsburgh, Normal Love. And then we're going to play next some kind of a bridge. I think you put something together for me. A Reader Digest version of a Normal Love tune. But I'm curious, you come back and you do the couple albums with these guys, and then what's next on the journey, on the train ride?
Well, I think I got heavily into, so part of this, I'll just say, like, the interest for me pretty early on was in some kind of disruption of normality. I mean, I'd always despised normality.
And, whenever I hear that word "normal," I really get upset. People, it's like luck. Luck isn't just good. Luck can be bad, and it can happen at the same time. And normal, you know, what's 1932 Germany normal? You know, you know what I mean? Or they'll say regular. I'd rather have a word like humane or decent. No, but they say normal. Scares me. It just scares me. I don't know. It's almost a knee-jerk thing. I'm not even thinking. My body just reacts.
Right. Yeah. I mean, but it's you know, it's sort of become a fashionable thing. There's also, I mean, I think a response to that, which is another kind of, then it's not normal. It's a conventional thought, which I'm also pretty opposed to. There's a lot of ideas that have been around for a long time. And they're usually pretty good. That's why they've been around. So I don't mean to say I'm interested in burning everything to the ground or anything like that. But one can examine the social order from any degree of distance and see that there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And you can imagine that things could be different, or things could be more interesting or more improved, or improved in some manner. And I think that's kind of what I was after. But I also, I mean, I should say a big practice that I became interested in around the, early, I guess, in high school, there were some figures in Philly playing free, not necessarily from a tradition of jazz or any other idiom. I mean, it tends to have that background from free jazz, but free players in particular that were all very different. Jack Wright, primarily, alto and soprano saxophonist, Toshi Makihara, who's a percussionist, and a man named Charles Cohen, who passed away a couple of years ago, who was kind of like the master of a an analog synthesizer known as the Buchla Music Easel. But they were kind of these three figures that I wouldn't necessarily, maybe it started out as a sort of mentorship, but then evolved into real friendships. We were peers.
I want to play this other Normal Love, speaking of the word normal.
Thank you. kid's face. The look on the kid's face when they are first exposed to the undeniably brilliant and empowering physics and engineering on gloriously aquatic display within the finely tuned structure of a fully loaded common plastic squirt gun. Yeah! There's nothing like seeing the look on a little kid's face when they are first exposed to the undeniably brilliant and empowering physics and engineering on gloriously aquatic display. On gloriously aquatic display. Gloriously aquatic display within the finely tuned structure. Yeah, the finely tuned structure.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. I heard you could see Baltimore from there. Or Balmore.
Yeah.
A bridge to bridge. Normal Love.
Balmore.
And then Midnight Bomber with Bombs at Midnight. Tune called Genesis. Big tune. Here's some Knoxville stuff. Omfu, Old Man Fuck You with Squirt Gun. Bark with Revolution, hashtag none. El Tren Fantasma, part 3 of 5. Alvaro Domine and Henry Kaiser. Henry spends a lot of time in Antarctica skindiving for work. Finally, Splinter from Hisswig, which is Kat Hernandez and Evan Libson. So, what's next for you? Well, first, let's tell people how can they find you on the internet.
They can't.
Okay. Solved. Solved.
Right. I mean, yeah, stay away. I don't want you to find me, please. No, I have...
I was talking more about your music expression, really, not personal.
I'm taking this social distancing thing seriously, where it's like to the level of, I don't need... Let's cut out the social media distancing, anything online, yeah, that'd be good. But there's a website that I've mentioned, Jack Wright. SpringGardenMusic.com. He's got a page for me on there.
Okay. And what's next for you music-wise? What's up ahead?
Well, since the future of live music is essentially non-existent and the world is
postponed,
flames. Yeah, the future is canceled.
No, postponed. Postponed.
If you insist.
I do, because I've been doing this 40 years. And we'll find a way. We'll find a way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm interested in, the shift has been a lot of people immediately embraced this kind of live streaming I'm not saying I'm opposed to it, but it was like the assumption was that this could be a proper substitute, and it's really not. I'm interested in what might occur as a kind of like a period of atrophy. Like there's something where John Cage was talking about how, you know, he enjoyed Beethoven, but he thought that people should put it away for 50 years, and then after 50 years you can bring it back and, you know, you can really hear it again. So I think there's an opportunity where it's okay to, I mean, this is a rare once in a lifetime.
Evan, what you're saying is you're not making any music right now.
No, I am. this is the thing. I mean, here we are thinking we're at the height of our creativity. This virus comes along, and now this explosion after several months of containment, of riots in the street, where this, we talked about a disruption of normality. I mean, this is it. This is really happening. And we went along before thinking we're at the height of our powers, and we had no idea that there's an inspiration from this kind of disruption for those that are attuned to that, that can go beyond anything we imagine. I've been really active, really inspired.
That's great.
And, working a lot, but it's not music. So that now the idea for me is, it's not gearing the music for any limitation of live performance. So it's, really boundless in sort of the conception of just recording and not having a concern of how it would be staged.
Okay.
So that's been really interesting. But that's mostly continuing with Mineshaft.
Okay. Look, we've run out of time. I'm so sorry.
All right.
It's been a huge honor. Go on the show and talk about these ideas. Talking about these ideas, I think, is important. So I'm very grateful to you, Evan, truly.
Mike, I've been, your work has been a deep inspiration for me for a long time. I'm really looking forward to the Desolation Center film that's coming out this month, right?
Who knows?
Right.
Anyway. It's been a June 1, 2020 edition of Watch for Pedro Show. People, keep your powder dry.